I turned it down a little bit. You caught me by surprise there. Sorry to everyone listening. Turn down your headphones just a little bit.
Yeah.
That was awesome. Well,
hey, welcome back. We're here. Two match days to kind of talk about. We don't got a lot of time, so we got to jump right through it. But
you're much happier than I thought you would be coming into this thing. Are we about to see like a...
Can't see it? There it is. It's the coffee. Yeah,
You're juiced up. Yuengling, classic lager, just staying light today. You've been taking it easy this January. It's not a dry January, but definitely like a... I'm gonna chill a little bit because December...
Yeah.
I'm back in school now. I had like 40 days off. You know, it's what you're supposed to do.
I feel that. Especially holiday time. It's a lot of meeting with people, drinking. You know, got to take a little break. But
It's all social. It's all fun.
Yeah.
All good. Chad, do you want to start with your team this weekend? And we can get that out of the way and then hopefully leave on a positive note.
You know, just a another roller coaster of a week for Arsenal, I guess. Northland Derby midweek. A weird one. Both teams certainly not at full strength. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess Tottenham less so, but you know, I thought Arsenal looked pretty good considering some of the misses they had, and you know, coming off of the previous week where they were creating a lot but just could not find the back of the net, there was a little bit of that worry lingering. But I think they came out looking pretty sharp. Did what they need to do. I know there's going to be controversy over Arsenal's winner, but I'm in the mindset of they got lucky on deflection, we got lucky on deflection. So it all evens out. But I get it. I get why people would be upset about that ball going out for a corner when it shouldn't have, but you know,
that was a pretty awful call considering where the ref's eyes were looking, and it looked like he was looking directly at it. So that was definitely a tough one to give
up.
And it happens.
I get it, but I'm just taking it as it is. Arsenal's season has been so like. It feels very unlucky that finally some luck fell Arsenal's way, I feel like. And, it happens against Tottenham. That even makes it better. So, great. I don't really have much more to say about that game. It was a whole match day ago now. So.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the draw was way more fascinating than everything that it kind of had inside of it. You know, Havertz has had a pretty tough week with the media being all over him and his price tag, and he's just had some wild misses. And in this game, you know, he had a pretty nice finish. It almost makes you just think, why can't just be simple? Like, that was a hard finish to do, but he made it. He didn't have to do too much besides just getting his foot to the right spot.
Yeah.
So
I feel for him because I really don't think he was brought in to ever play striker unless it was out of necessity through injury and stuff. Right. Like, even when he first got there, Mikel was starting him in the midfield. I think that's what he was bought to do, and lo and behold, you know, they don't sign a striker, or their plans don't work out because of injury, whatever it might be, and then he's up there, and he can do enough up there to help out the team, and can score goals. Obviously not as clinical as we might want him to be or might think that a proper striker can be, but it's I think a tough spot for him. I think he seems to be one of those players that really swings with his confidence. When it doesn't go well, of course the fans and media are gonna put pressure on him and bring up the price tag and stuff, which, you know, he has zero control over anyway. So, kind of sucks, but you know, he's out there doing what he can for the team. Do I wish some of those misses would go in? Of course, but you know, this is just where this team is at, and I don't know. If we had a proper striker, like, sure, put him in over Havertz, but we don't. So mm-hmm. this is our best bet. And, like, you know, Jesus is coming back looking good, and then Strange is ACL. So, you know, that's unfortunate. And, you know, you can put Trossard there, but he's, at least for Arsenal, has been more effective from the wing. You know, Martinelli had always been talked about as like, oh, maybe he's really a center forward. I think Mikel's maybe tried him there like once. And, you know, so it's, there's no option, you know. But yeah, you know, the draw was a bummer because, you know, you do go up two against Aston Villa, who last season caused some issue. And then this season, you know, it looked like we were going to have the upper hand. I think it just came down to a little bit of fatigue, a little bit of, you know, players in not natural positions, like Thomas Partey at right back, which there's the whole stat going around that every time he started at right back, Arsenal have lost or something. So everyone's like, well, don't play him there. It's like, yeah, but what are you going to do? You don't have Saliba. They want people online want to pull Rice into Saliba's position because he's played center back for West Ham a couple times. It's like, I don't know if I'd drop Rice out of the midfield for that. You know, Partey, at least, like, at Atletico, I know he played right back a good handful of times there. So he has that, like, in his locker. Mm-hmm. Is it his, you know, preferred position? No. Is he as quick as he might have been when he was at Atletico? No. You know, does he provide the same attacking threat that Timber or Ben White did at right back? No, but again, you got to kind of do what you got to do. So I don't know. It's not ideal, but, you know, I'd say it's easy to point fingers at him because, yeah, he kind of loses Ollie Watkins for their second goal, tying goal. But, you know, hands are kind of tied. Like, there's no one else to put there.
Yeah, your depth is the biggest killer right now, just in terms of who you need to throw out and what are you really going to expect from them. When is Ben White due back? Is he anytime soon?
He's back training on the fields, not with the team. So I think probably within a month or so, we should probably see him get minutes, I would say. Maybe a little bit less than that. But yeah, he'll be big to have back. I mean, I don't know who will play right back, who will play, you know, if Saliba's out longer, like who will cover there. But, you know, Timber and Ben White can both do that right center back and right back position. So it'll be a big help. You know, ideally Saliba comes back and you can just kind of rotate Ben White and Yuri and Timber so they aren't getting overworked. But we'll see, you know. I think my biggest takeaway from that draw is just Sterling is just, I'm glad it's alone. Because I understand why we did it in the first place. Like, we've needed Saka cover for a while. You know, this just kind of presented itself. And by all accounts, sounds like Chelsea is paying most of his wages still. So it's, you know, a pretty risk-free move for Arsenal to make here. And then the hope of that, you know, Sterling at City with Arteta seemed to have some good connection that opened him up a little bit more. So I guess they're hoping that would kind of happen again. But it just, you know, even in the game against Tottenham, it just, I don't know, he seems too indecisive or not even like selfish, just like, I think a little bit slow to make a decision.
His brain wants to do something and his body isn't going to let it happen. He's 30. He's at that point where this move is more likely a locker room move. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously to back up Saka, but at the same time, Arsenal has been playing Saka every single minute possible. So they didn't think this was a long-term injury for Saka is almost unheard of. arguably the worst backup that he's had. Consider, I mean, he's never really had a backup per se.
Yeah, I mean, his backup before was Reese Nelson, which
I don't really know.
Yeah, we didn't really see much, and you know, I guess you'd maybe say he has performed better than we've seen Sterling, but you know, it's still just such a small amount of games for even him to really say if he would be better to have here than Sterling. But yeah,
and yeah, Sterling's not supposed to be that guy who comes in and is your savior.
No,
which at the end of this Aston Villa game, looking like he didn't try to play hero ball, but he definitely, especially that one move where he tried to cut in and like it looked like he forgot what he was doing. And then he did it another time on the wing, got fouled, and like the commentators were like, that's what he needs to do more of. And it's like, but I would say no. I would say he needs to do less of that even and just be a, I don't know, maybe a threat in the box rather than being on the wing, because he's not able to take anyone. He's not going to beat anyone one-on-one anymore. I think he has to come to terms with that, which is what he tried to do maybe 5 minutes prior. And then when he got fouled on the wing, it was more of a, I'm going to maybe out dribble you and hope you lunge in. And they did. And, you know, that's when he used his, I guess, veteran presence to earn the foul. But yeah, that was tough to watch. Tough to watch him out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just glad it's alone. You know, it's not another like Willian situation where, you know, we're stuck with him or have to pay off the rest of his contract to get him to go. So, you know, I think it was worth the risk, because for Arsenal, it was such little risk. And, you know, yeah, you're not expecting Saka to have any sort of long-term injury, but, yeah, you know, it's a bummer he can't, well, a bummer he isn't providing more. I think he can provide more, but isn't currently. But yeah, and, you know, it's a bummer to give up the two goals the way they did, both on a cross. Like, you know, Marino, I think, should have been more aware of Tielemans running in behind him. I don't know what really happened there. And, you know, Partey at the end, I think, just kind of mistimed it. He kind of steps forward and then steps back right as Watkins then starts his run. So I don't think he necessarily lost him, but, you know, maybe just his anticipation was a little bit off.
Well, it was a great ball by Cash too. That ball floated and hung and almost stayed in the air much longer than we thought it would. And then, yeah, Watkins obviously just made a great timing on it. Good comeback for Aston Villa. Like, got to give them their flowers there. They never gave up here being down 2-0. Mings in their back line just looks like he didn't miss a day. I mean, besides, I mean, he came back winning that Champions League game, and we said, wow, that's a lot of rust. That was tough. Yeah, that was tough. But now it looks like he's obviously going to be starting the rest of the way for them.
I think so.
Mattson coming in to be a starter was, I thought, surprising in a game like this. And then got that yellow card early, and Digne came in and played really well too. So their wingbacks are just, you know, I said their whole back line is doing great. Emmy's actually probably the biggest concern here in how he's been goalkeeping, which is a shocker. But man, does that guy know how to waste time?
Oh,
how frustrating is that?
He's, you know, he's one of the few, I think, that, you know, like we used to have like a Sergio Ramos character, right? Where he was the same thing. He knew how to waste time. He knew how to push it to the limit without, you know, getting the card or getting sent off or anything. And Emmy is just in the same vein. Like, somehow, I don't know if he sweet talks the ref before a match or something, but he finds a way to just extend the time on the ball as much as he can and, you know, get away with it. And I don't know. I mean, I get it. You got to do what you got to do. And, you know, Arsenal's, you know, has come under criticism for slow throw-ins and time wasting. So, like, teams do it. I get it. But he's certainly, like, one of the best, most, like, controlled time wasters.
Yeah. what did bug me this game was, I think Aston Villa could have pushed it a lot harder in those final 10 minutes. And they opted not to. And I thought that was surprising. I thought when we started to get down into the late 80s, like that's when Emmy was really starting to draw out his goal kicks and the free kicks. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of surprised by that considering the momentum that like they just scored two goals here. Like, why not try to go for a third? And so I was surprised by them trying to play for the draw rather than Arsenal was trying to hurry things up and get the win.
Yeah. It was surprising too. Cause once that first goal went in for Villa, I was like, it felt like an instant switch of, of momentum. And, you know, this is an Arsenal team that has been struggling to score goals and finally started to, but like, I don't know that they had it in them to really kick it up another gear and score a third goal when they needed it in this game. So I think, you know, they would have tried, but then if Villa played the counter, I think you probably have a good bet to maybe get the third goal. You know, I guess Arsenal nearly had the winner off of Kai Havertz, but unfortunate handball situation. I don't really have an issue with it. I know people are trying to nitpick every little frame of if it hit arm or chest or whatever, but
I don't think that got anywhere close to his chest, right?
I don't think so either. Okay. You know, it. I think, you know, it hurts as a fan to like see the goal winner and then for it to be called back. And, you know, I think the camera angles that they initially showed were a little bit like, I don't know, not as clear as I think they could have provided. So I think that caused some of the discussion around it. But for me, it's fine. You know, if you got to rely on a wonky call like that, then it, you know, wasn't going to fall your way, and that's just that. But yeah, you know, credit to Aston Villa. They probably could have, like you said, pushed for one more, and I think if not got it, at least kept a lot of pressure on Arsenal. You know, an already kind of makeshift right side there, and just keep hammering that and see what happens. And but no, so thank you for that. I'll take the point at least.
Close one. Twas a close one.
Yeah.
All right, well, we can jump to Liverpool here because I was getting pretty nervous. 85, almost 86 minutes of that game. I was getting my notes ready to I actually probably at the 86th or 7th minute I was going, "Dang, Brentford at home." I was like, another draw. I was like, this is these teams that are just good at defense and kind of locking it down in the back line. Seems to be our struggle when we get to control of the game for, 80% of it. And to be fair, Brentford had their moments too. But again, it felt like a Liverpool controlled game, like kind of always. Trent played a lot better than previous weeks, a little more motivation, especially on the 1v1s. Didn't let anyone get by him. But when teams like Forest and Brentford are playing the ball so much from the back and booting it away, and then we're taking the energy to go from back to front, that seems to be our issue right now in terms of finding those goals until Darwin Nunez finally decided to show up. Chad, what beautiful timing, because his name has been in so many transfer rumors.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's getting a lot of criticism for not scoring a goal in quite a while. And now we're going to look back at this game and be like, remember when he got two to get those 3 points when Arsenal and Forest were kind of right behind us? Yeah. Huge game both for his mindset to get the 3 points. I mean, I was chalking this up as a draw. I really was.
Yeah.
Just because we had nothing going for us. Salah didn't look that dangerous. I'm like, is he going to hit this midseason slump right now? Oh, maybe. I feel like that can be expected for someone who just had a crazy first half of the season.
Yeah.
But yeah, this was one of those games that it was one of those never give up type games. And that's why we have Darwin on the bench, because he always comes out there. Even if it's not great, he's at least going 120 miles per hour, trying energy, to change the game.
Chaos.
That's why we can't get rid of him. He's the only one who's coming off the bench and giving it that type of speed. Now Jota's gives it to a certain degree, but it's different. It's not.
Yeah.
It's not. It's the right word. He's more calculated in when he will do something to help the team. Darwin's just going to do it for the amount of time that he has. And he was given, when did he go in? 86 minute, roughly?
Something like that, yeah. Pretty late.
Oh, no, he was there in the 65th. Well, he seemed invisible, honestly, for those first, what, 20 minutes, kind of getting the flow of the game. But then he started taking touches in the box. And maybe he just needs to start doing more of that. Instead of trying to get the ball into him and having him trying to float it, pass him the ball, let him dribble once or twice, and then just blast it. Because that seemed to work. That seemed to work just fine. And the other thing, Szoboszlai, when he is in the game, changes so much. I mean, we didn't see him.
Yes.
He wasn't in that Forest game. Was he in this Forest game? I'm trying to remember. He was in the Forest game, but he wasn't in the Man United game. And that's when I noticed how much of a difference he makes, especially in the final third. There are so many times when we either earned a goal kick or, you know, had a shot and went out of bounds, but he was up there in the 6-yard box. And in games without him, we didn't really have a midfielder who wanted to attack like that. McAllister and Jones, they're playing way too central. Not that's a bad thing. That's where we need them. And so to have that attack-minded midfielder, it changes so much. Even if he's not getting the ball, he's at least drawing attention from the team's defense. Yeah. So Brentford, almost perfect from them. They almost played that game to a T on defense, but Darwin just found a way. Thank goodness. We needed that one. That one was a big struggle. One of the most struggle buses games we've had in a while. The Forest game was, it didn't feel like a struggle because we expect Forest to be that good with Brentford. Especially how Arsenal kind of beat them a few weeks ago. It seems like you kind of were able to slice them up a little bit, but I wanted the same thing out of Liverpool. We just couldn't, it just wasn't happening. So that was, you know, tough to watch, but they found their 3 points and now we get to get out of there and hopefully go to Ipswich and clap them because we need a break, honestly, after these last couple weeks.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think all teams are kind of at this point too of like, regardless of how they're playing, just like, please just give me like a week.
Give me a bottom
to figure. Recover a little bit. Like, you know, it's been so just like go, go, go through, you know, the festive period and even now. And, you know, it might come to Arsenal's benefit to be out of the FA Cup and like maybe out of the EFL Cup, just to have those little bit of a bigger break. But I mean, it's a bummer for Brentford to like be so close and then just like, I'm assuming just, you know, the mental fatigue of like defending so hard for the whole game and then just kind of being like one step away from where you should have been. But, you know, Trent has the quality to find that pass and he did. And then I think that second goal, you know, Brentford is already trying to get something back. And I do want to say I was impressed with that second goal from Darwin just because I feel like I've seen him so many times take the ball into the box like that and then just blast it.
Right.
But for him to take that moment to cut in and just like control, I was like, that's what kind of what you said. I think just he needs to do is like, it's not always going to be the big run and blast situation. You can take the ball, control it, take your one little step to the side. So if he can build on that, I think, you know, this Liverpool team, I think, will need help, right? Salah has done so much in the first half. I think he will come back. I don't think it's going to, you know, end here for him this season. But if someone can start scoring goals to take pressure off of Salah, I think then he'll be able to get back up to speed, like, even quicker.
Yep. It'll be very helpful. And, like, Diaz has been kind of a little cold lately, too. I mean, to be fair, almost all of our attackers have been coldish, but we've had a tough run. I mean, this has been a tough month and really haven't dropped that many points. So we go to Ipswich next and they look pretty bad against City considering City has been, you know, not the best. You know, my fear is now we can kind of segue to it is we're right at that time when City starts to ramp things up. This is the time of year. And we're so thankful that they dropped so many games in the previous few months. We just have to keep pace. It's crazy to say we have to keep pace with a fifth place team. But that's kind of what we have to do, just because we know they could go on this crazy run of form. Foden's scoring again. De Bruyne's back. They're unlocking some key pieces, young pieces on the wing. With Savinho. Like, there's always that chance that they will linger, right? And can we trust Forest? We don't know. Can we trust Chelsea? Probably not. Oh, we can't trust Newcastle right now after the game they just had last weekend, considering their crazy run of form. It's crazy that they're in fifth and we're still worried about them.
Well, I think it's fair. Like, you know, they went on that terrible run and we were all having fun with it. We all enjoyed it. But, you know, I think whether we wanted to admit it or not, that it was always going to come to an end, right? They were always going to find some form again. You know, and unfortunately there weren't enough losses in that stretch to like really count them out, because you know, here they're in fifth and 12 points off of first, but if they go on just the winning spree, then it gets scary real quick.
Okay, here's their next five. Okay, it's crazy. Chelsea, Arsenal, Newcastle, Liverpool, Tottenham.
So I mean, it's all points that they need to take. And potentially could.
Yep.
And then they're right back in this thing. It's a big gap to close. I don't know that they could do it without some other teams falling apart. But, I think you do have to respect the talent that's on that team, and that, you know, if it all starts to click, or at least most of it starts to click, they're just, it's City again. They're back.
Forest after Tottenham too. So it's really their next six games could really make or break their season. And then they have a pretty nice, I don't want to say an easy finish, but this is the bulk of their schedule right here. This will decide whether or not they're going to be in the title race come March. So really this next month, they got 1 month to prove it. And honestly, I don't trust in Chelsea right now. Arsenal, I'm sorry. I don't trust in you either right now.
It's fair.
Newcastle, I can't trust you. Liverpool, sure. I can trust us for, depending on where we are that month, right? If we're on a draw spree, maybe. But if we're starting to click again, okay. Like, we got Champions League coming up. I'm hoping that can bring another type of fire and dimension back. Since Champions League is so open.
You have to think, too, is that, you know, Liverpool and Arsenal in Champions League is, Liverpool maybe more so, is like secure, right?
Right.
They're moving on. City is still not. So they still have to put it all out there for those games too. So hopefully that's just a little bit more, you know, tiredness in the legs and plays its part over this crucial month for them. But I mean, we'll see.
Could backfire in the way that they don't move on. And then they are only playing in Premier League, and we are still burning out our guys while they are catching our tail. It's a slippery slope here with how they want to move on with their season. That's probably my biggest fear in this next month is those teams that are ahead of them in the table, which they will all play. Mm-hmm. Can they actually beat them? Because I feel like if one or two teams can beat them, I'm good with that. I'll feel a lot better as long as we're not dropping points with them.
I mean, I feel like Arsenal has played against City without Saka before and done well enough. I think got a draw out of that one. And then they'll obviously have to do that again this time. Hopefully we'll have Saliba there. Maybe Ben White in there too. And it's at home for Arsenal. So I feel like that it's all playing into Arsenal's hand here to, you know, get something out of the game, whether it's a draw, at least a draw, hopefully. But, I think it's fair. Like you said, it's just from the Liverpool perspective, there's no team below you that's like so rock solid right now that can for sure upset City or, you know, cause enough issue.
Now they could very well all beat City. I that's not my expectation going in. Gosh, man, I was just trying to think. Last time Liverpool played City without Mo Salah was probably 2016. And we beat them both times. So, you know, if Mo Salah doesn't want to show up for those games, we might be all right. Gosh, it's crazy looking back at those team sheets and what we threw out versus what they threw out, though. So, yeah, I think the biggest thing for City, though, is Foden finding the back of the net. I mean, that's just a huge confidence boost. Again, it's Ipswich, right? Kind of expected that. You know, City had a nice, last couple games here. They've put in a lot of goals. If we go back to the cup games, they've put in, man, close to 20 goals in the last five. So they're finding the back of the net. Confidence is growing. Pep is done with his divorce, which kind of all makes sense.
Holland's
now.
Here for 10 years.
Oh, man, that's crazy. 9.5 years of Holland, which we can talk about this for a second. Means nothing in today's age of superstar players. If he doesn't want to be there at any point of these 9.5 years, he's going to get out. So it's such a power move that I wish, I don't know, I wish there was some common rule where we couldn't sign these guys for X amount of years.
Yeah, I think it would be better to implement something like that. Because like you said, it's more just preserving his value, right? Yep. Over 9 years, whether he stays the whole time or, wants to leave early, like, it's Erling Haaland. Any team that can afford him will come knocking if he's saying he's done with City. You know, it won't be hard to move him on. And I think, too, it's like, you know, because Chelsea does this, too, or has been doing this with just the super long contracts where it's like, I get they're signing really young and they want them there, you know, for this extended period of time. But I think that it's a little bit, I guess maybe selfish is like the word of like, especially when you're signing such young players and this is the length you're giving them. Like, obviously, for them, jump at the money, jump at the security of, you know, a long contract at a Premier League team. Like, that's great for you, but if you start, you know, not getting the play time you want or just not working out, you don't like it there, whatever, you're going to be harder to sell because you're not an Erling Haaland. You're not, you know, a star player that everyone will come clamoring for. So then if they do, you know, Chelsea will want to sell you for as much money as they can get, which will just be probably too much considering, you know, what you're really worth, but then they got to pay cover the rest of your value on that contract. So it's like the long contract game, I think I wouldn't be surprised if it's here for a few years and then finally some like ruling or whatever comes in of like 5 year max, whatever, 5+1, I don't know, but
player options or team options. It's a weird thing that's happening. I hope it doesn't become the norm. And it's just strange too. I don't believe that Haaland's going to want to be in England for the next 10 years and not try to go elsewhere to do a, you know, a different league or.
And I mean, at this point you already have won everything with City basically. Right. So I think, you ride this out for a few years. You're having a great time. You're enjoying Manchester, whatever, but okay. Yeah. You had some success at Dortmund when you were coming up. A lot of Dortmund guys go to Bayern, so maybe you want to go back, do the Bayern thing. You know, maybe you want to, you know, try and get into that Barcelona Real game too. Like, so I don't think we'll see him for the next 10 years at City, but I mean, I guess get that bag while you can.
He's got to be Harry Kane's replacement, right?
I would think so. I think that'd be it. You know what they're looking at.
If Harry Kane is 32, I think he's 32, and give him another 3 years over there. And then Kane will go to Barcelona. Lewandowski will probably go to AC Milan. And we're going to see into this rotation. This is just how this rotation is going to keep working. City, you know, the divorce with Pep makes sense and how they were doing in that month. And now I'm like, okay, now that's in his past. He's refocused. It makes me just a little stressed. And seeing this long-term contract for Haaland as they start to get moving, it's just something to pay attention to.
Yeah.
Yep. Forrest almost blew it. Did you see that goal line clearance?
Yes. Whoa. Yes, yes, yes.
Whoa. Let's go. Ramsdale did not have the best day of his Southampton career, that's for sure. I kind of worry for him.
Bad for that guy.
Yeah, right? Went from like the highest of highs to likely going to get relegated with this team and be the starter for him, and he's just not playing his best ball. I don't know what they do with him or what he's going to do after this.
It's hard because, you know, throughout most of this, I feel like you could kind of just point to not having a good defense in front of you. So obviously you're taking on a lot more shots and obviously then some will go in. But like, I think he's starting to not look good either, which is a bummer because I think, you know, even at his time at Arsenal, he was a pretty good shot stopper and made some crazy saves. So I think some of these, you know, lower to mid-table teams could look at him, but if they're going off of these performances at Southampton, I think you're maybe looking elsewhere.
Maybe soon, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not making your squad any better, unfortunately. But, you know, you look at the players in front of him, too, and there's not a whole lot going for that team either.
Yeah. Definitely I'm hoping that, you know, if you dive into the keeper stats or you know, the little intricacies of goalkeeping that all the scouts will know, like, he's at least showing good signs there. And you know, that whatever team might look at him, I don't know. But he can find a way out of Southampton because, I mean, I don't know how this team would fare in the championship, but I feel like they just so often, you know, like, shoot themselves in the foot. And I don't think that's a, you know, Premier League nerves thing anymore, at least at this point. So I don't know if you go down, you will go down to the championship next season, but hopefully you can find a way to like shake this off because this has just been a absolutely terrible season.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, at this point you call it and maybe you do start bringing in younger players to give them the experience. I'd hate to, you know, just give teams free wins like this, but at this rate, you're arguably going down as pretty close to the worst Premier League team of all time.
Yeah.
I feel like we do this conversation yearly, but they got to be close. And I think as we get further along, we'll start to really compare them with, I believe it was a Burnley side and I want to say, oh man, who's the team that, was it Timu? West Brom? Shoot, I don't remember their names. I don't remember who got the lowest. There was like the biggest point differentials. It was a couple years ago, but yeah, not great. So for them to almost get a point though off of Forest was a fascinating watch.
Yeah.
That's what this comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, clearly they want to fight. They want to try and get the win, so that's good. But I mean, yeah, you gotta keep your wits about you if you're, you know, going against them because they did get here, you know, off of skill and all their play, so they could take advantage if you really let them. But
I'm saying, you know, what was Forrest doing in that last just 10 minutes? Just fell asleep.
Yeah, I guess. Really, thought it was done and, you know, send it home early, but nearly came back to bite him.
Yep. I'm sure Nuno was pissed about that one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, David Moyes is back.
David Moyes is back.
I was skeptical. I'm still a little skeptical, but I feel a little bit better now, too, because we went from ultra defensive-minded Sean Dyche keep him in the prem to David Moyes, who is maybe going to help your offense, but we both question it. What offense is there for Everton to even to have them be successful? And now, when we saw the rumor, Tim Weah possibly moving to Everton. I mean, we'll get to see him in the Prem if it happens, but I don't know if that's the direct answer. I will say Calvert-Lewin in his goal this weekend, that was shocking.
Yeah, I think that's the best thing Moyes could have done. Told Calvert-Lewin, you can shoot.
Yeah, right. It is allowed, and you can maybe score when you do it. In his first 4 days, Moyes said he feels burnt out. And obviously, this was a joke, but I just found it funny because you could very well feel burnt out after every weekend. But beating Tottenham, kind of a surprise.
And not just beating Tottenham, but like pretty handedly beating Tottenham. I know that the scoreline doesn't reflect it, but I watched the second half of this game. So it was already 3-0 at this point. But even second half, you know, Everton looked the better side, save for a few moments, which, you know, resulted in Tottenham goals. One of them being just Pickford coming out for a ball, not getting to it, and Kulusevski just like chipping it in, and no defender on the line to clear it. So, you know, a pretty easy goal there. And then, Richarlison kind of getting a little something at the end too, but it did not seem like Tottenham was ever really in control of this game. I know they still got all their injury list and missing some big names, and you know that's causing issue and will continue to, but like this was just bad. This is especially because you still have Son out there. You still had Kulusevski. You have Madison. You still have Poro. You kind of have a lot of good key parts that you could rely on. And, I know it maybe makes you a little bit one-dimensional and teams can defend that well. But, like, to go 3-0 against Everton?
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
Is this the most? I feel like this is the most goals Everton has scored this season.
Probably. I think.
It's not a lot of twos on the board for them. Let alone.
Well, yeah, they just haven't scored a lot anyway.
Three is the high. Yep.
So. Yeah, I don't know. I know as Tottenham have struggled, we've talked about like not overreacting and sacking Ainge because he's done a lot for this team and club, but like I think you're right on that line now. I think of something has to change, right? And managers are the easiest one to replace. So I don't know. I don't know how his future's looking. I think I saw they have Leicester next. Yep. Leicester next. So if that goes south, that might do it. I don't know.
You would think this would be the dagger. I mean, I honestly saw the scoreline. Yeah. It was 3-0, and I said, that's not looking great. And I don't know what, unless they're just going to ride it out. But at this point, I don't want them to ride Ainge out to the end of the season and then fire him. When you already know what you're going to do, because you still have some quality in that squad. It's not like it's a 1-11 is terrible. I think you should retain some of those pieces that we just mentioned. Obviously, you can't sell those guys if you still want to be competitive in the league. I just don't think keeping Ainge for the rest of the season is going to retain them or going to help retain them. Once the season's over. So
yeah.
If you already know you're going to fire the guy, why not just do it now?
Yeah.
And I don't know.
I don't know how close they are to that. Their form has been just terrible.
It's awful.
For a while now. And, you can keep pointing at their injuries, but, like, it does kind of also point to Ainge's inability to kind of adjust tactically to what he has and what he's playing against. So, I mean, that alone, I think, could be enough to signal, okay, well, yeah, you brought us some great attacking counter football. Like, we had fun watching that. But, you know, once shit hit the fan here, we saw, like, a lot of inflexibility and just, like, tactical, like, I don't know, like, shallowness, right? Of just not being able to tweak enough to even, like, get a few wins going here or a few draws going here. It's, you know, it's not like the whole team is out. I know there's a lot of key pieces, but I don't know. I don't know. If you're going to get rid of them, yeah, get rid of them now. There's no use in riding it out to the end, but it's a weird spot. It's just Tottenham being Tottenham, right? You're just kind of forever in this, like, rebuild now, and you got to kind of commit one way or the other eventually, but I don't know. It's 15th, 24 points. Everton 4 points behind you. If Everton passes you,
they're right there. They're not far off. I mean, relegation isn't that far off either, which is just crazy. It's crazy. Yeah, this bottom of the table, actually, like, the mid table, the 13 through, I guess 17, we'll call it, are just, it's fascinating considering all those teams. We'll throw Everton in there too. Why not? We're top eight 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Everton without the point deduction would have been up there. And then, you know, now Man United is arguably in their worst, this is the worst team they've had at this point of any season. The lowest they've ever been. What do you think the lowest in the table they've ever been is? To end a season. Oof.
To end a season?
Yeah.
Maybe ninth.
It was eighth.
I was thinking eighth first. Yeah, dang eighth. It.
Hold your gut. And it's like, I don't even think they're going to get in the top 10 at this rate.
No, yeah, they're not looking good, and I can appreciate Amorim coming out and, like, keeping it real and saying all this, but, like, at the same time, I don't know if you want to keep selling that
like
story that we're just bad.
Yo, like, we're so bad. Do you see what I'm doing out here? This is terrible. I can't. His team's like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
Diallo is their only bright spot right now. Super definitely. Young and definitely what they need to continue to grow on, and who knows, could be the, I don't know, that next guy for Man United. I think he's on his way. He's only 22, which I thought he was much older than that when I was kind of reviewing him. But yeah, this whole club just needs a total overhaul. I thought they were being just a bunch of sore losers in this Brighton game. Sully marches back. I don't know if you saw his old pass. Baby. He's the glue. He's the Brighton gloom. Brighton now is finding some form. Good. This was a good victory for them to get over Man United.
Yeah, you got Matoma looking good again.
Yep. Welbeck is back. I think that's a big deal. So, you know, for them to come in and kind of just own United, that definitely kind of set the momentum for them to end this, to get on to this, you know, halfway point of the season and to finish strong. But also just to really damper Man United and just to, man, it's just a club that's hurting. The Onana howler, oh my god, that was so
what? He's going to take more risk this season. He told us.
I mean, they're so lucky. They're so lucky they didn't score, because Man United, I think, had one or two more chances to score a goal in that game. Mm-hmm. And obviously they still would have lost, but just I can't imagine them scoring and knowing they'd at least be even. But Onana made sure with whatever he was doing. I mean, Chad, I could have made that play. I don't know. He was just diving for the ball and, like, didn't catch it, didn't cradle it into his body. It's like, what? That's goalkeeping, like, 101. Why are you even? He could have, like, just picked it up if he went a little bit wider of an angle. Yeah. No one was getting to that ball.
No, it looked pretty, you know, run-of-the-mill save. Like,
Bro.
Nothing crazy. It didn't seem like it had any weird spin or bounce or anything. Just, I don't know. He took his eye off the ball or something.
It was terrible. It was so bad.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I don't really know what their plan is to move forward here. Like, you can't sell the whole team and buy a whole new team in one window. So, you know, a good chunk of these guys are going to move forward, and mm-hmm. you're going to have to figure out something with them. You know, I saw rumors, I forget who, but someone was looking at Garnacho, which I don't Napoli, yeah. I don't think you necessarily want to get rid of him. Like, I know he's seems to be a little bit out of favor and right now, but, you know, the times I think we've seen him on a hot streak, like, he looks good enough to be there and contribute, and you know, whether he's a long-term thing or not, I don't know, but you know, he kind of, like Diallo, brings the pace and just like the drive forward yeah. from the other wing. So I think he should keep him. Xerxes or Højlund, I don't know, that's like a coin flip. It's
yep.
There's no real standout there. You know, if the talk is true that like Mainu is up for sale and all these other guys are up for sale, that's crazy, because, you know, Mainu is probably one of your, you know, first names on the list of just he's consistent enough to like get us through these games right now.
Yeah, and young enough to where you don't even know what his ceiling is going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, so... I mean, they'll obviously drop some of the older names, I think. Like, you yeah. know, Casemiro will go, Eriksen go. I wouldn't be surprised if they try and get something out of Harry Maguire, mm-hmm. since he's had a little bit of a resurgence here. Like, I think that could be smart. You know, he'll be a miss, but I think between Euro, Martinez, and... did they sign De Ligt, or is he just on loan?
I think they signed them.
Yeah, so like De Ligt, I mean, hasn't really impressed me as much as I thought he would.
Same.
But, you know, I think, I don't know, maybe you keep Harry Maguire just because he seems to be consistent again now. I don't know. But, yeah, it's going to be a weird transfer window for them in the summer, I think, already, but then it'll get more or less weird depending how low they finish here.
Absolutely. If they start to go into that relegation zone too, which is a possibility,
yeah
man, this team's gonna be a scrap fight down there, especially if Ipswich and Leicester can get a victory or two in there and no one else yeah. is, it could be really tight at that bottom. So fun to watch. Fun to be at the top and watch it.
Yeah, yeah. See, it's as much as Arsenal's season's been up and down, there's always so much works going on down below there. Yep. So it's all about perspective.
Exactly. Glad we're not them.
Yeah.
All right, Chad, should we do a 2 week award here?
2 week award. Oof.
I mean, we could drop it just to one, but at least how about yeah. for just team of the week, we'll do a 2 week. Because I'll give you my nomination. I think Bournemouth has got to be in there, considering they just hard stopped Newcastle. They drew Chelsea the week prior.
Drew Chelsea.
Yeah. Which, again, solid. Now they're top seven. 1 point behind Man City, however you want to look at that. It's pretty damn impressive at this point in the season. Yeah, I think we did not expect Bournemouth to be this high up, and that victory against Castle. Clivert is just, you know, scoring these hatties whenever he wants, it seems like.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really like this team. I think they could threaten top four. I mean, they are. Mm-hmm. They're threatening. Yeah. But, yeah, I'm going to definitely keep my eye on them a little more. I need to watch a full 90 just to see how they're playing.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't watched a ton of them, but from the times I have, I think they play pretty well. They seem to play like nice and quick, and yeah. just kind of depends. Like if they can get the front to back to click, it goes well. But I've seen a few times where just like there's just zero connection, and then they just kind of fall apart. So
yeah,
but yeah, definitely one to keep an eye on. I mean, yeah, they're 3 points off of top four. So
they got Liverpool right there. Liverpool in February 1st. So that'll be
okay.
One to watch.
Yeah, yeah, I like that one. I was hoping I was going to get to nominate West Ham for getting a little bit of a comeback for their season here, but then Palace said no.
Hard stop.
Yeah. But I will shout out Aston Villa. I mean, they've had a rough patch of form and, you know, kind of figuring it out, get just a 1-0 victory over Everton midweek and then, you know, come back from 2 down and potentially could have went on to get the winner against Arsenal. So, still don't think they look as good as they started the season. But they're fighting. They're coming back. Trying to do something.
Brighton, too. I want to shout them out. They haven't dropped. Yes. They haven't lost a game since mid-December. So, nice. You know, they just keep trucking along.
Yeah. Yeah. I like Bournemouth, though. That's a... It's a good shout, especially that Newcastle. Like as much as Newcastle was, yeah, on a tear, Bournemouth just walks in their place and says, "Nope,
four. Here's four." Yeah, pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
I hate to do it, but the player, at least for today and last week, really is Phil Foden.
It's fair.
He scored 5 goals in his last 3 games in the Premier League. It's not. Again. Expected him to score this many? No. But is it about time? Yes. Like, this is the player I think we expected for a long time. It's crazy he hadn't scored a goal, I think, from last week. It was like the 2nd or 3rd week of the season was when he scored. So he went on a very, very long drought of not scoring. So that's why I'm going to give him this one. And then, of course, Kluivert, just another Hattie for Bournemouth. Those are my main two.
Yeah, I'd agree with those two.
Shout out Darwin, though.
Darwin, I mean, your sub appearance alone is enough to get you in the conversation. Yep. But I think Phil Foden's a good shout. I mean, we've been kind of dogging on him these past match days because he doesn't do anything. And then, you know, finally he's starting to step up and get the goals when they need the goals. And, I mean, yeah, once against Ipswich, or, you know, it's different levels, but
still got him.
You're doing it. Yeah, you still got him. Still finding some form. So, well played.
All right. Favorite goal?
Oh, favorite goal.
Calvert-Lewin is up there for me.
That one was nice. I know Darwin's second was like a little bit inconsequential, but just to see him with that control, like,
yeah,
it lit up my eyes when I watched it.
Yep, that was nice. I thought the Hudson-Odoi goal was sweet.
Yeah, that was nice.
Even Chris Wood goal was nice. Again, I was like, man, this guy's just having a season. I will not be shocked if he reaches 20 goals.
He's getting closer. Mm-hmm. And just chipping away one at a time. It's just... Yeah, I like Matoma's goal. I like that he's back. Who else?
Oh, Tielemans' goal was nice. As was the Havertz finish. Again, that ball was lasered into his legs, and he just found a way to put it in the back of the net. No, like, true, absolute banger goals where I stood up and went like, oh, my God. Again, just a lot of nice quality efficient goals, but I for me, Calvert-Lewin, because it was just such a like a surprise, I guess, because he hasn't done that in what feels like forever.
I mean, yeah, a surprise for him to score, but also a surprise for him to like. I just didn't realize. I guess he had that control still, ability to do that.
Right, back forth, shot in.
Yeah,
his last goal before that was September 14th.
Oof,
been a while.
Well, you know, hopefully that spurs him on a little bit and the whole Everton team, and they can start grabbing some points here.
Spurs them on, you would.
I didn't really mean it, but right when I said it, I was like, that worked.
Perfect.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, okay. Yeah, so there you go.
Not too bad.
Weeks-ish, kind of. In yeah, the bag.
They came fast. Having a match week end on a Thursday and then picking right back up on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Life's about to get a little crazy. So yeah, we go Champions League this week.
Mm-hmm.
And we go Premier League. We have no international break until when? Never.
Yeah, what? Maybe the after the third?
No, I don't think so. No. I think we're yeah, you're right. You're right. The 26th of February, we aren't back until the 8th of March.
Oh, okay, okay.
So we'll be grinding here for this next month.
There we go. Big month ahead.
Oh man, let's see what City can do. That's the biggest focal point of this month is can City retain their momentum?
Please no.
I don't. Yeah, please. For the love of all humanity, no. All right, Chad. It's been a pleasure for a quick one here. I'll check back with you next weekend. Champions League this week. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
All right. Hooligans pitch. We're out.
Peace.
Peace.